Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Kings of Queen City podcast. And today I'm joined with Scott, and the Bengals are 8-6, currently sitting alone at the top of the AFC North after a 15-10 win at the Broncos. It was not sexy, but they win. And in December, it's all you need. All you need are wins.
Oh, yeah. Like, it can be ugly football this time of year. It's not going to be pretty. Teams are fighting for their lives. And I mean, that's what the Broncos were doing. Like, They were 7-6 too. Like that game was pretty much their season. And you know, it's not gonna be pretty when you end a team's season. Because they're not just gonna roll over and die. They're gonna just try to make it a game. So throw style points out the window. I mean, a win's a win.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because I feel like the AFC North and the AFC West are pretty similar with how every team's kind of fighting at this point. I mean, the Chiefs kind of pulled away with the Chargers win. But, I mean, the Raiders are still clawing, Broncos are still clawing, and the Chargers are all kind of in the mix for the wild card. But that's kind of what the AFC is looking like right now. So, it's very interesting. Big takeaways from the game, number one for me was, like, kind of prayers up to Teddy Bridgewater. Probably one of the most likable guys in the NFL, just with everything he's gone through, especially with the knee injury. And then now this, just hope he's okay. Apparently, it was just concussion. So, good to see that, especially after the guy for the Chargers had a pretty similar injury. But, besides that, defense, again, balls out, a little bit less of an offensive threat, so they take care of business. I would say the biggest defensive takeaway for me is Khalid Kareem has his kind of, like, breakout in the NFL game, plays an incredible game, has a play of the game. Offense didn't do too much, but against a Vic Fangio-led defense, you kind of just want to get what you can. They did that. I mean, McPherson is the man, and Joe Burrow hits a clutch play to Tyler Boyd, and then big level. So, I mean, all around, a great game because you win. Definitely things on the offense I think you can work on, but when you're going up against a secondary that's, I would say, one of the more elite ones in the NFL, you're not going to throw the ball all day, but also they couldn't run the ball either, but you end up getting a win, so you take it.
Yeah, I mean, touching on the offense, like, the Broncos are, like, historical. Look at the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. They've had, like, elite defensive. They've been really good. And Vic Fangio's, you know, defensive coach, like, that is a good defense. I mean, yeah, we need to be scoring more than 15, but I mean, like, I thought they kind of played the game to a defensive style, thinking, you know, the Broncos rely more on their defense. So, you know, let's try to put points up, but shorten this game. Cause I don't think we were very scared of the Broncos offense.
No, and I don't think you should be. I mean, in a weird way, I think I got a little more nervous when Drew Lock came into the game because I think it might have been part of my take where I heard it, but it's – or I don't know, it might have been LeBron. It might have been Locked On. I forget, but Teddy Bridgewater's floor is higher, but I'd say Drew Lock's ceiling is way higher. And you kind of saw that. He has some really elite arm talent, but he just doesn't have the precision sometimes, can't really dial it in. But there's sometimes he makes some throws, and he did to St. Patrick. Trey Waynes kind of gets bodied there for a touchdown. But – you know, it is what it is. They hold him in check. He tries to do a little too much. And that's when Khalid Kareem has the big play where he pretty much just strips it from Drew Lock, which I thought was another fumble that he had down. But, I mean, he was apparently down, so we'll take that any day of the week. But huge game for him. Really nice to see him come in and kind of bring that pressure from the other side that we wanted when Trey Hendrickson can't do it all. So it was really nice to see that. I mean, Trey Hendrickson still continues his sack streak for, is it 10 games or 11 games now? I forget.
It's at 10. Next week, if he gets one, would tie the NFL record with 11.
That's absolutely insane. I hope he does it. And honestly, I kind of like the matchup against the Ravens, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But defensively, I really liked what I saw this week.
Yeah. I mean, I was very impressed being there, you know, seeing the way the defense played. The one thing I will say is, yeah, I do think Teddy Bridgewater, like, overall, I trust him more, which makes me think he might be a better quarterback.
Yeah.
But, and like, I when he was down, like, on it, my first thoughts were like, I hope he's okay. It was a scary play. And yeah, Teddy Bridgewater just seems to be, you know, one of those snake bitten guys, can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
But I mean, when Drew Lock came in there, I was a little like, more like, this is not the matchup I want to see. Yeah. Bengals historically versus backups, I don't love. And then, he's gonna make more mistakes than Teddy. Teddy's very conservative, but Drew Lock also isn't afraid to, you know, kind of throw it downfield. So I didn't like that specifically with Cheeto out, but I mean, I think our defense did a great job of getting pressure. And there, I mean, there were on guys you didn't expect that were making huge plays. Like Kareem, yeah, looked awesome.
Yeah.
Just being there, like, I don't know his stats, but I was very impressed with Joe Bachy. And then he got hurt and he's done for the year, which I don't love because our linebacking unit's a little thin right now. But I thought he looked good enough that he's definitely earned himself a shot next year at the active roster, in my opinion. He's going to have a real shot going into preseason for it. But, I mean, guys stepped up when they needed to. Eli Apple, that defensive play out on Cortland Sutton happened literally right in front of where I was. I mean, beautiful play. Beautiful yeah. play. Just got it out. Like, I was going crazy. I'm like, yeah, that's Eli Apple. That's what he does.
Yeah, I'd say, honestly, that play by Eli Apple and the play that Cheeto made on that deep ball where he picked the ball off from Herbert, I'd say those are probably the two best DB plays of the season, honestly. Especially that yeah. – I think the Eli Apple one sticks out in my head because, one, it is Eli Apple, so you really didn't expect, one, that recovery, and, two, the ball skill to punch that out. That's an elite play right there. That's something that guy's like Jalen Ramsey make. Like, that's an elite play. So, and he talked his shit after the game, and he kind of deserved to. He had a good game. I also thought it was weird how you can put up a nothing on the stat column like Jerry Jeudy did and still try to talk shit. But, I mean, you're a pro. I understand it. Talk. So,
I really, like, going in, I was wildly unimpressed with Jerry Jeudy. And not even, like, from the fact of, like, he wasn't on the stat sheet. Like, I thought it maybe was just him and Teddy were on different pages because there were a couple times, like, you could tell I was in the end zone. So, you know, like, I had that view of the game. You could tell, like, they just weren't on the same page.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, yeah, maybe it's just a Teddy thing. Like, and then Drew Lock comes in and the same thing's happening. It's like, I can't say it for sure, but there were definitely multiple occasions. It kind of looked like Jerry Jeudy was just kind of out there doing his own thing. Like, you're not even like just running the, hey, I'm going to be open route, not whatever the QB was expecting. But yeah, he wasn't great. Cortland Sutton, we did a good job at. The Broncos receivers are young and they're like decent, but I wasn't really scared of any of them.
Yeah.
I actually, like, I thought Tim Patrick, who I've kind of bashed with like some of my buddies, like that he's not that good this year. I thought he was the best one. He kind of impressed me. I mean, he did moss Trey Wayne's, but like he just looked good.
Yeah.
And I think Fant is awesome. But honestly, their best like pass weapon in that game was whoever their backup tight end is. I can't pronounce his name. It's super long, but it starts with an O.
It's Okawen really Wenbaum or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I asked the guy sitting behind me that were Broncos fans. I'm like, who's this 85 backup tight end guy? And they're like, we don't know how to say it, but he is good.
Yeah, his name's Albert Oak. I know he went to Mizzou with Drew Lock, so.
Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so they do have like a little bit of a connection. But yeah, the defense all around, I was impressed. I mean, Jermaine Pratt, ever since Logan went down, really has taken a step up. He's all over the place. Definitely the leading tackler, I'm pretty sure, since he's gone out. So he's just been everywhere. Yeah, I've been very impressed with his play. I know PFF didn't rate him very highly, which I was kind of surprised at because there wasn't anything that I saw from him that I immediately was like, oh, that's a bad play or whatever. But very impressed with him. What you said with Joe Bachy, I was impressed with him too. He kind of stepped up, played really well. Sadly, out for the year with an ACL. But even then, Marcus Bailey played pretty well too. He got a half a sack.
Yeah.
And I mean, Marcus Bailey was a guy, I know when he got drafted, everybody talked about as maybe being a steal, but also he had the injury history. So that's taken a little bit of his athleticism away. But I mean, he played pretty well, honestly, for what I was expecting. My kind of thought going forward is I do think that Logan Wilson's probably done for the year. It's just I don't think they're going to, like, say it. I think they're keeping him active just in case they make a run or something, then they can activate him. But I'm assuming he's only going to be used if they make the playoffs. So it's kind of my thought on it. But the D-line, again, absolutely incredible. I mean, you got the kind of – people have said Larry Ogunjobi for the past few years has been pretty streaky. So I think you got that hot streak right there where he's been a little inconsistent, kind of hit there. Trey Hendrickson, another great game. I mean, he got held like three times, so you're assuming that's at least two sacks that he gets if he's been held three times, because it's Trey, for Christ's sake. But Sam Hubbard, again, great game, but also his is more in the run game, which you expected. And that was what I was scared of with the Broncos. You have Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon and those are the guys that you're worried about, really. And they had a pretty good game, but I mean, 133 total yards out of two rushers. Honestly, you're pretty okay with that. No touchdowns given up. I'm fine with that. They have an elite rushing attack, if I'm being honest. I think Javonte Williams is really good, and they were able to contain him, and I was super impressed with that.
Yeah, the Williams kid, I did like him. I thought he was – I get that they're trying to run the two-back system because he is a rookie too. Rookie running backs, you kind of want to limit their touches. They haven't played a season this long, so they've never taken this many hits before. So, I mean, it's kind of just smarter to limit a rookie in that sense. But, yeah, I was much more concerned when he was on the field rather than Melvin Gordon. I just thought he was the better player. And then, yeah, I was impressed with the defense. DJ Reader is, like, for a position that gets absolutely no glamour, like, I'd argue most people don't even know who that is. DJ Reader, like, watching him play, if you just look in the trenches and watch him like battle and go to work, it's fun to watch. The guy's having a, like, he's been incredible. He's been the unsung hero on this team to me. Like, he's a big reason why we're hard to run the ball on.
If you love football, DJ Reader should be your favorite player. He does everything right. He doesn't do anything that's sexy or pretty, but the entire defense runs through him. He is an absolute menace every time he's on the field. I think he might have a sack on the season. I think it was against the Bears, if I remember. He might have one or two, but yeah. I remember the one on Fields pretty vividly. But everything he does is the reason the defense runs so smoothly in the run game. That's why they're so good, is because he eats everything up, and he does it at such a high level. He's going to be a guy that's going to be overlooked because he plays nose tackle, really, but he's playing it at such an elite level. It's a shame. Because him and Trey Hendrickson, I think, are two of the most underrated players in all of football. And I think it's more impressive that I think Trey Hendrickson is not more impressive. I think it's more of a shame that Trey Hendrickson is underrated because of the numbers he's putting up, and people still don't like put him up in the same ranks as some of the guys. I don't think he's the same type of guy as Myles Garrett or TJ Watt, but he's having almost the same type of production. Having
that type of season almost.
Exactly.
Like, behind.
Yeah, but him and DJ are a huge reason why the defense is the way it is, and I definitely think they got to get their props, especially DJ Reader. I feel like most of the media people the diehard Bengals fans definitely give DJ Reader's flowers, and he deserves them.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, to put it this way, last year we were maybe the worst rush-stopping defense like I've ever seen. I mean, last game of the year we gave up, like, how many rushing yards to the Ravens? Like, 400 million.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there have been other changes, and he's not the sole reason. But look at the defense with Reader to without Reader, because he went down early last year, like week, I don't even remember, but it was early. And yeah, like we've been tough to run the ball in this year. We have one of the better run defenses, and like I think DJ Reader is a massive part of that, and I think he deserves a lot of the credit for that turnaround.
Yeah, 100%. And then also, and we don't talk about it a ton besides Evan McPherson, but I'd say special teams all around. Great game, especially coming after the Niners one. Trent Taylor deserves some love, definitely. I mean, after a game where you have three muff punts, you really just have to field the ball. Thought he did a really good job of, one, catching it, and then, two, making the right decision after. So props to him. I mean, Evan McPherson is an absolute weapon. The kid's special. I mean, when you look back on it, I know we weren't people that gave the Bengals a lot of flack for drafting him in the fifth round. I know people did. But that never was, like, one, I didn't know enough about him coming out. But two, if you have a guy that you could see as so far what he is, which is an elite weapon, you draft him, especially when you come off season where you had Randy Bullock, where you did not have the consistency. Now you have the consistency and the leg. So anytime I'm not going to say he's on the same level to Justin Tucker, because Justin Tucker is in his own thing, but he's definitely in the upper echelon of kickers right now. And he deserves a lot of credit, because I think he's a lot of the reason they're in the games they are, is because they feel comfortable with him every time they're on the field.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the first time we've ever seen the Bengals push a ball late in the half to just give a kid a shot. Because you can't do that with, you know, Fat Randy, Mike Nugent, Shane Graham. Like, they didn't have those type of legs. Yeah, people are gonna bash if you take a kicker regardless, but those are the same people, like, Browns fans bashed us for taking a kicker. Those are the same people that are just watched their kicker who's missed six of his last 11.
Yeah.
And they thought he was the answer at kicker. So, I mean, it's just – it's. I get a lot of people are going to bash it because it's a kicker. It's not a glamour pick yet. I mean, but it's the fifth round. It's not like, you know, you're drafting these guys to be day one starters. That's more of a project type round. So, yeah, I had no issues with it. And I think you've seen it pan out to the point of if there's a kicker you do really like, yeah, fifth, sixth round, if he's there, grab him, take the safe route rather than if they don't get drafted and you're one of 20 teams vying for him in the free agency for like non-drafted players.
Yeah, exactly. And then also got to give some credit to Kevin Huber. He had three punts in the 20, punted for a net 368 yards, which is insane. He punted a lot, but he had a 61-yard punt, so good for him. I know he's getting old, but he's still got the leg a little bit. And I do think a big reason of why Evan McPherson is as good is because him, Clark Harris, and Evan all operate really well together. And I remember hearing Evan McPherson talk about that on the Pat McAfee shows. He said just the whole team, they're and whenever they snap the ball, they're all on the same rhythm. They all get it. And I definitely think that's a big props to Kevin for being around as long as he has.
Yeah, and him being a you know, McPherson being a rookie, like having those two veterans to kind of lean on really does help, you know, like it can be a scary place walking into a kicker, which is pretty much, you know, the most lonely job on the field, you know, like you're not the main guy, like in practice and all this, you kind of just are off doing your own thing. And even your unit in general, it comes on to kind of do its own thing. It doesn't go with the rest. So it is a different type, weirder position to be. But yeah, him going into having two veterans definitely has helped him kind of transition. And I mean, McPherson, like we had high hopes for him. Like I think he's even exceeded them this year. Like the kid's been nails. He's hit big kicks when he needed to. He already has the Bengals record for longest field goal, which I think had a couple more yards on it. And then he now has the most 50 yarders as a Bengal ever in a career. In what, 14 games?
It's crazy. He has the most
50 yarders of all time. He needs one more 50 yarder to, I think he needs one. It might be two. He needs one or two more 50 yarders this year to tie the record for most ever by a rookie kicker. Like the kid's just, he's changed the Bengals team in the aspect of our field goal line. Now, like it used to be, like with last year with Randy Bullock, like you had to be in near the 30. Like you didn't even want to be at the 33 for a 50. And I mean, this year, I don't know about you, but like get to the 40, I feel good about it. Like get to the 40, you might as well. Like we have Evan McPherson now.
Yeah. He's been an absolute weapon. Really glad to have him. Just all around, I was very impressed. Obviously, it's not the fun, sexy game that everybody wants where your offense puts up a ton of yards, your defense clamps down. But you had the defense clamp down, the offense made plays when it needed to. And that's what you need in the NFL, especially when you're making a playoff push. This is the kind of stuff you need. You need to be able to win these close games where not everything is going to go your way. And they did it. So I think that in and of itself is awesome. A lot of people, including myself, I didn't love the play call at the end of the game when it's third and eight and you come out in the heavy set. I don't love that, but what's your take on that?
And the more I've seen it, the more I understand it. My biggest issue isn't that they run the ball, because I think running the ball there was a prudent idea.
Yeah.
My biggest issue is the fact of how they ran the ball.
100%.
Mixon just went off the field, so he had Pirine in, and we ran heavy set. So effectively, your four main weapons on this offense that everyone knows were all not on the field. Like we had one receiver, so one of our three receivers was on the field.
I think it was Jamar.
But I hated that. Yeah. I'm A-okay if you wanted to run a draw play. I don't care. But do it with your main guys on the field. Like, at least make them think. Or if it was me, like, I would have been okay. Like, I would have liked to see a pass, but I'm not upset that they ran. Like, that was the right game management decision.
Yeah.
Especially with the way the defense was playing. But, yeah, I would have been okay to see a pass because, like, I trust Burrow to the level of tell him he has one or two reads, and if it's not there, just sit down and take the sack. Give yourself up, take the sack. We already saw him do it, you know? So, but I trust Burrow enough to do that. And I think I think Zach Taylor and the Bengals do too. It just, the way the defense was playing and against the competition they were playing, that's kind of the call you see. Whereas if you see that type of same game situation in the future, say this week, I think you see the Bengals at least give Burrow the option to throw.
Yeah, I think my thing was not the fact that they ran it, it's how they ran it. I just don't, yeah. I don't like the heavy set to begin with. I think you're tipping your hat a little too much. You don't have enough weapons from the tight end position where you can run a heavy and keep them honest. You just don't have it. I mean, I do like CJ more than I think the Bengals do, which is weird, but I think him and Tyler are a little underutilized, and you finally got to see the Tyler game again where he had a big game. But I would have liked something where you give Joe the decision to either make a check at the line or do what you said, call a pass play, and if nothing's there, he eats it. Like Joe played really smart. I think this is not his sexiest game. Might be one of his smarter games in the NFL. You see him throw the ball way more. He had a better pocket presence, something we talked about the past few weeks, but he had the greatest throwaway of all time. The one play-by-play caller had it. And I mean, he did, he was smart to get away and then dump it, which is something he has not done in the recent memory. But I think he had a good game, and it's not sexy. It's not incredible, but it was effective. He got the job done, had the touchdown when you needed it most. So yeah, my issue was more so the fact of, again, it's not the same of taking the ball into Joe's hands, but it's the same thing of where I want Joe Burrow to be able to make plays because he's the guy. So just let him make plays, and they didn't, but it didn't end up biting you in the ass. So you're fine with it. So you go away okay with it. Defense played great. I mean, probably should have had like two interceptions this game, but they did. They come away with none. So that kind of sucks, but you know, it is what it is. At the end of the day, you win the game. Doesn't matter if it's ugly. We don't apologize for winnings in the NFL, and you definitely don't apologize for wins in December.
Yeah. I mean, look at next week. Let's say theoretically we win 3-0. Do you care?
We win 2-0, and I wouldn't care.
Yeah, like who cares? Yeah. We're in first. Like, I get you want to see this exciting, fun brand of football. Actually, like, I'm in the minority. I love offense, but like, there's something about, you know, a December game that's just ugly and it's like 13-10. Like,
yeah,
I do enjoy that. That's, you know, just like some gross football, like it can be tough to beat sometimes. But I mean, yeah, like I don't care how the Bengals win. I just want to see the Bengals win. So like I thought they played well. There was never really a moment in that game I thought the Bengals were gonna lose. Like I thought we pretty much controlled the entire game. And I mean, Teddy goes down. Broncos have huge like inspiration is not the right word, but you know, like they're going out, they're going to battle the rest of that drive and do something for their guy.
Yeah.
And they go and do that and they take a lead, and that lead lasted what, maybe a minute on the clock. Like Bengals going like a 3-play drive for a touchdown.
Yeah.
And we're back in the lead. So like there was never a moment I was like super, super concerned. Like, man, the Broncos are playing better than us. So I'm scared we might not win. Like, I thought we were the better team pretty much the whole day. So,
yeah, and I think it's how it played out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it wasn't pretty, but, and the other thing is, let's not forget, like, this is in Denver in the altitude. It's also at a tougher place to play and a place historically the Bengals are terrible. I think that win made us, I think we're now 4-13 in Denver as a franchise.
Jeez.
Like we don't win in Denver. Look at the year AJ McCarron blew the game in the second half. Look at the year we were going to make the playoffs when we were little, and we botched an extra point to lose the game. Like, this is not a place we win historically. Like, the fact we won in general is like, you know, all like the ugly win's perfect because that was pretty much the only way I kind of thought it could go.
Yeah, and when you look across the AFC North too, this was a big week. If the Steelers would have ended up losing that game, it would have been the perfect week. You saw Baltimore lose to the Packers in a close game, so that's a bit concerning considering they had Tyler Huntley, but still, Cleveland loses to the Raiders, which you love to see, so everything happened your way, so now you lead the AFC North, so, I mean, you're in the driver's seat, you took care of business, everybody else helped you out too, except for the Titans, so you're happy with it, and I mean, when you look to everybody else's schedule, everybody's schedule in this stretch is brutal. everybody's schedule is tough. The Bengals play the Ravens at home, Chiefs at home, and then they go to the Browns. The Browns play at the Packers on Christmas. Merry Christmas. The Browns play at the Steelers, and then they play home against the Bengals. The Ravens play at the Bengals, a home against the Rams, home against the Steelers. And the Steelers play at the Chiefs, home against the Browns, away at the Steelers. So away at the Ravens, sorry. But
yeah, no, every team has two divisional games and a game versus what people think of as an elite team. Because yeah, every team plays two divisional games and either the Chiefs, two Chiefs games, a Packers game, or a Rams game.
It's brutal.
I don't think any of those teams you want to play.
Yeah, this is a, like, if you're looking across the league, this might be like the toughest, what would it be, 12? Yeah, it'd be toughest 12 games I think teams are going to play in the league, just with how many good teams and competent teams and teams that are vying for a playoff position. So it's going to be interesting coming down. I mean, out of everybody, when I look at the schedule, the person's schedule I don't like the most for them, I would say it's probably the Steelers. I don't like that you have an away game at the Chiefs and the Ravens to end the season when the Ravens are going to matter. I hate that for them. I mean, well, I don't hate that for them, but just looking at it objectively, that's tough. That's brutal.
I think it's Cleveland.
You think Cleveland has the toughest?
Yeah, you get that game got moved because of COVID. So that's essentially – it's essentially a Thursday night game. Like, in the time-wise, it would be a normal Thursday night game.
And it's the Packers.
During the day, at Lambeau on Christmas, like, that is tough. And then their next week
– is Monday night.
If you're big into storylines, I'm not going to say probable, but I think it's probable, the Big Ben's last home game on Monday night against a team that he has – like, same with the Bengals. Like, historically, he owned them for his career as a Steeler. Like, I don't think any team has, like, a nice schedule, and I actually am pretty confident in saying that whichever team – if a team can go 2-1, they're going to win this division.
Yes.
I mean, more to the Ravens and Browns. If either of them go 2-1, I think they win the division because that's 10 wins, and I think 10 wins is the mark. But, I mean, yeah, I don't think any team has a schedule you want to play, but, like, looking at it, I think the Browns might be the toughest.
Yeah, it's tough because when you look at it, to me, it really comes down to, do the Bengals win both of these games or who beats the Bengals? That's going to be who wins this division, because that is those three. I just don't see it really happening for the Steelers, if I'm being honest. I just think they're the least talented team when you look about it. I'm just the least scared of them. But like when you look at the Browns, Ravens, and Bengals, like the games you're looking at with all of those are the games where they play each other. So it's the Bengals, whoever wins those two Bengals games. I think if the Bengals win both, like even if you win one, like that just puts you in, you have to win two games in the stretch for the Bengals. You have to win two because it's just, it's not,
you have to win the two division games.
Exactly.
I mean even you can, I think even if we win two and we lost the division game and beat the Chiefs, like, let's say if we lose to the Ravens and beat the Chiefs and then the Browns, we're 10-7, but like,
yeah, the thing is, then the Browns, like,
you're probably looking at a wild card.
No, at that point, the Browns have to beat you, because if you beat the Ravens, they can't take your spot, because then you have the head to head. So even if they would win the next two games, they can't get in. They can't get in the AFC North. The only team. The Browns would have to beat
you. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, strictly as, like, take away the division, like, just the Bengals. Like, if you lose to the Ravens, best case scenario, now you're kind of hoping for a wild card.
Yeah.
You're not catching Baltimore. I think we got some huge games coming up in the AFC North. That, like, the next 3 weeks, I'm at the point now, you could tell me the seven teams in the AFC and their seeds, and I'll just say, okay. Like, I don't think anyone really knows how it's going to shake out. Browns went from first to looking like they were going to be in first to last in a matter of a kick at the end of a game. Like, the Bengals could be as high as the 2 seed after this week and could be as low as, like, 9. Like,
it's crazy.
Like, a lot of we don't really know. These are massive, massive games.
Yeah, I'm trying to look. I also don't know the other games that are going to matter in the NFL this week for us specifically. Niners Titans kind of matters because the Titans Colts thing, that's going to play a big factor.
Bills Pats
is huge. At that point, we kind of want the Pats to pull ahead. We want the least competition we want in the wild card. So we want the Pats to pull ahead.
So yeah, if you're looking at the wild card, yeah, that's the answer. If you're looking at look at the bigger divisional thing. If the Bills beat the Pats, the Bills hop the Pats. So that puts the Bengals into 3 instead of 4.
Really? Okay. Well,
I don't think either is like a poor option. But
I would personally rather play the Bills too. So
I do not want to
play Bill Belichick.
I don't know, man. I would rather play home against the Patriots than at the Bills.
I don't know. That's a tough one.
If we're playing the Bills, it's probably at home, and the Pats, it's probably on the road.
Yeah. But,
I mean, there's no playoff team I want to play.
Like, yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah.
We're going to go to the playoffs. They're not a pushover unless we get the Steelers. But even then, God, I don't know.
And then looking around the league, too, like the Chargers play the Texans. So they're going to win only a 10-point spread to put your house on the Chargers minus 10. But and then the same thing about the Lions.
Yeah,
get out of here.
You said the same thing about the Lions.
The only thing that really sucks, too, is the Broncos play the Raiders. So one of those teams is right back in the wild card race. So at 8-7, like you're right back in it. So that sucks. Yep. But yeah, this is going to be probably one of the craziest months of football I think we've had in recent memory, just because every game is going to matter for something. And the AFC is so close. It's so close. It's going to be insane. I'm just excited for it.
Yeah, I'll toss in the other team that has a not a great shot, but a shot just because they haven't been said. I actually called it when they were like really, really bad at the beginning of the year. Their schedule is just so favorable. And the Dolphins are in a position where I don't think they're really in it, but like they're in it. They're 7-7 and they play someone beatable this week too. Like they could be 8-7.
Saints.
Yeah.
They play Saints, Titans, Pats.
Saints are playing tough ball.
Yeah, oh, that's a tough stretch.
I didn't know it was the Titans. Yeah, that's not
great. Saints, both Saints again, and Titans are away too.
Or would you call me insane if I say they won 2 somehow? Like
no,
with the NFL this year, yeah. And they because won 2, the Saints
don't look great on offense either. So
I think the wild card's 9-8 is enough to get you in. If
maybe
you're the team that benefits from all the tiebreakers. Because I think there's going to be like 5 teams that are right at 9, like right at that line.
This whole like is 17 game schedule messes everything up.
I'm actually wildly in on it. Like if this is what we get every year, just like pandemonium down the stretch, I am all for it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I think we've said it for 3 different games this year, but I mean, this game, forget everything else we said about this game being the season. This game against the Ravens is a season. If you win this game, you are more than likely going to be in the playoffs, and you're going to be alone.
Like winning the division.
Exactly. So this is huge. This is everything that, as much as Zach Taylor wants to talk about building this winning culture, about doing this, this is the game you have to prove it. We know you whomped on the Ravens early in the year. Do it again. Once is a fluke. Do it again. Then I'm going to start believing in you. But this is the game where you have to – you have to do it. You got to prove that you are this offensive mastermind, because I think they're gonna come at Joe again. They didn't have a terrible game plan, I would say, against us the first time, but I think Joe is smart enough to dissect it. They got the big plays they needed. Especially that in that game, not the Jamar play sticks out for me, because one, I think that's just a great play from Jamar, but that CJ Uzama play really sticks out in my mind, is like Joe Burrow like figuring out that defense. So, but I think they're going to come with everything they can. And I mean, you've seen the Ravens drop 3 games in a row. I mean, then they lost that game against the Dolphins. The Dolphins ran like they had the same coverage, I want to say like 40 times in that game. And I think our defense is probably better than the Dolphins. So I think you kind of had Lamar's number in that first time. So this matchup is big, because I think you played them very well the first time. But I don't think you can roll into that game with the same mindset and same script that you did the first time.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love like the analytical side of football and, you know, data points and all that, like all the good stuff, this is a AFC North game in December with playoff implications. The Ravens have lost their last three games by a combined 4 points. The only time they've been blown out this year was by the Bengals. I don't think the Ravens are a team capable of being blown out. They're going to be in every game. I don't think the Bengals are a team capable of being blown out. We've been in every game too, aside from the Browns game. So both teams like to play close games. Like, I am very confident in telling you this game's going to go all the way down to the stretch. Like, it's going to be a ball game, and it's going to come down to who makes the bigger plays in the last 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
Who can make that play that wins this one or loses this one. So yeah, with that said, I think it's another huge, huge advantage that, you know, we're at home, even though we've been better on the road this year than at home.
Which is wild.
Like,
we've played harder teams at home too.
Yeah, that is true. But like, and remember at Niners game, me and you were talking, we're like, the turnout wasn't great. Do you have like a concern about turnout for this game? I'm pretty confident it's going to be crowded and it's going to be really loud.
I have a little bit of a concern just because of how bad it was for the Niners game.
That's true. I'm like, if we win this, I mean, this is a massive game. I think it's, I know people too, like, you know, with my extra ticket, like bringing a buddy or whatever, like I have had to text around a little bit because people are already planning on going.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. We're going to this one. Like, yeah. Gotta go. Yeah. Like, I'm excited. I think the crowd's going to be loud. I think we can, you know, get a win in the black jerseys for the first time, and then we're going.
It's black jerseys, black pants, orange socks. Love the orange socks.
I'm super excited. I think it could look awesome.
I'm in on the orange socks. The orange socks I'm in on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about real quick a little bit with the Ravens game. Give me like one or two matchups that you think. You say matchup, I'll say matchup. What do you think are going to be key matchups for this game?
Okay. The main matchup I am thinking about is kind of a multitude of matchups. It's the wide receivers against our secondary.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw Jamar Cook Humphrey. He's now out. The Ravens are down to, I think they have four cornerbacks on the roster. They were playing a safety corner versus the Packers. So, and that'd be their weakness right now on their football team, just based on the bodies they have in the rooms. And that's, I mean, look at the Bengals at the beginning of the year. We said this was going to be the strength. Looking through the year, I mean, it kind of has been the strength. So I think it comes down to, you know, how can we throw the ball? I think you see similar to Green Bay, like offensively, where we're gonna try to throw the, like, we're gonna run and try to be balanced and all that we always do.
Yeah,
but we're gonna attack through the air. That's the way you win this game, and that's kind of the way we want it in Baltimore. So I think that's the biggest matchup. But I don't know. Like, they always scheme up great pressure. They scheme up great defenses. Like, the Baltimore Ravens are always one of the harder teams to play. Like, rookie quarterbacks are quite bad versus the Ravens, like, historically. Because what is it, Dom Wig Martindale? Is the DC? Yeah, like, he designed some crazy stuff. He's tough to play against. He's really good at what he does. So I think that's going to be a really fun matchup. And overall, like, I think that's the matchup that decides the game.
Yeah, I kind of mind the one that I first thought was what you hit on at the end. I think it's going to be the offensive line versus the defense, I'll say, because I don't think it's – when you play the Ravens, it's not strictly your offensive line versus defensive line. It's kind of a multitude of everything, the blitzes,
they blitz a lot.
How you pick up. And my thing is also, I kind of want to give a little bit of props to Carmen after last week. Had a really good game. I mean, as much as people like to dog on him, he has some elite sets. Like, there's some sets I watch him play, and I love what he does. Well, in pass pro and in run blocking, this is a game, if I'm being 100% honest, I would like to see Carmen play. I know he's not on the first round depth chart this week, but he played really well against the Ravens week one, but the first time they matched up, he played really well, especially in the run. I'd really like to see him out there again. I don't think we're going to see it, but that's a thing. Adeniji's got to play well. They've got to play well on that right side, which is a little bit worrisome. Johnson's getting the start again on the right side, right? Right
tackle. Another guy who gets bashed by people. Fred Johnson has always kind of shown he's better as a tackle.
Yeah.
We've had to try to play him at guard, you know, because injuries and moving bodies and whatever. But he's always shown he's been – like, I actually think he's a pretty solid tackle. Like, he's not great. He's solid. Fun stat, the Bengals are 5-0 when Fred Johnson starts and finishes a game at tackle. So, I mean, like, I do like what he brings. I think Carmen definitely has that meanness, that nasty that you want on your O-line, especially out of guard. Like, you know, just somebody nasty that wants to go throw his body somewhere. So I do like that out of Carmen. The best thing I can say too is being at the game, I didn't know he was in. I didn't know Adeniyi went down. And like, that's the nicest thing you can kind of say about a lineman sometimes is that you don't know. I noticed in like the fourth quarter, I saw the 7-9 there, and I was like, oh, like, when did this happen? So like that he played well. He played well. Like, I feel good about him going to the future. And again, he was a guy, I know we took him in the second, but he was always a tackle, never really played guard.
Yeah.
I kind of said it was more of a, not an experiment, but a quick project, you know. He struggled with his body weight and stuff, but I've never doubted Carmen with his ability. It's more just
for sure
getting him comfortable in the position he's trying to play him. Cause yeah, it's a new position. You got to kind of learn everything again. So.
Yeah. And then also shout out for Johnson. He graded an 82.8 on PFF for the game. So he had a really good game. I mean, just I really liked what I saw at the right side. Obviously the Broncos don't have an elite pass rush or anything, but I mean, holding your own against NFL talents, NFL talent. So, and again, Carmen played really well against the Ravens the first time. So I kind of wish he was going again because I don't know. I feel like I'm low key a Carmen stan. I just like, there's plays when I see of him that I'm like, this guy has some elite traits. Like his get offs there. He's athletic enough to get to the second level, especially in the Ravens. Him and Fred Johnson were mauling some guys in the second level against the Broncos. So I kind of like their energy. I'm excited to see Akeem Dungy too. I like him. Like they've got a lot of prospects on the offensive line that I do like, and kind of it's hard when you have this kind of low-key revolving door because you don't get the same chemistry, the same matchup. I think that's why Jonah and Quentin are playing so well on that left side, because they have each other to kind of understand what you're doing. I know you probably have different calls to each other, and then it's obviously going to change a little bit when you have different guys in there, but I don't know. I think that line is going to be a big thing. I think the run game is going to matter a lot, because if you can start running the ball, and they did run the ball really well against the Ravens. They obviously had that one big run to P. Ryan in like the second, I think, which kind of blew it open a little bit there. And then they had that big run at the end to kind of put the game away with Joe Mixon. I think if you can run the ball, I don't think it should be the first decision, but I think it's going to be important to establish it.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll even go like, not a step farther, but use that and kind of run with it. I think the biggest thing about this game, me personally, if the Bengals put up 10 points in the first quarter, like let's say let's see the Bengals actually start like a football game decent.
Yeah.
Like let's have a good start. And yeah, like I don't see where it ends up going wrong if that's the case. We've been terrible starting the games a lot of the time this year.
I'm trying to think of a game right now in my head that Pittsburgh's the only one I can think of that they started off hot.
Pittsburgh, that's it. Since then,
and they win that game by 31.
The Chargers game was a disaster off the rip.
And then you almost come back. The
Niners game was a disaster off the rip.
Almost come back.
Two muff punts. Yeah, and like we put ourselves in terrible holes and then try to dig out of them, which. You know, you don't want to see, but I did love seeing that from this team, kind of, you know, have the stones, have the metal to kind of fight back, you know, show you care, claw back and give it a go. And they've done that. But I mean, time to take the next step forward. Let's start a game well. If I just want to see the offense put up some points early, like it's been bad to the point of if we, like, what would you think if I told you we scored 13 in the first half? I'd be like, wow. Like, you know, we're starting a game, like, decently. The offense is clicking.
Yeah, because I would say the
– two field goals, like, three good drives? Yeah, I'll take that in the first half.
And that's – I think that is almost a disservice to how good this offense can be, because this is an offense that when a lot of people have talked about, like, you've heard James Lapine say, like, 30 should be the number. And I agree. I think 30 should be your number. And when you think about it, halfway there is 15. So if you, that's literally two touchdowns and a field goal. If you get that in the first half, you're already halfway to your 30 goal. And they've not rarely hit that, but they've rarely hit that this season. It's annoying. And the one time they hit 30 once where they didn't win. And that was the Mike White Jets game. So, I mean,
yeah, like, I was even trying to think, like,
yeah, the games they've won, they've scored 27, 24, 24, 34, 31, 32, and 41 and 15. So the only game where they did not score was the Broncos game.
Which, again, is great to see this team win in different ways.
For sure.
Because coming into the year, like, we were both pretty that this team had one avenue of winning, which was throw the ball.
Yeah.
Like, offensively, just outscore teams. And, you know, it's never been so great to be wrong. This defense has been great. Like,
yeah,
I've never been so happy to be wrong when I was, like, not sure about Trey Hendrickson. And, I mean, I couldn't name you a the end I'd rather have, to be honest. Like, he's playing incredibly.
Yeah.
He's had a great season. So, I mean, just if we can get some points up early, I feel really good about this game. But
I definitely agree with you.
Starting well.
Yeah, and the main thing, especially when you talk about the beginning of the season, I definitely think Lou Anarumo deserves his flowers. And we've talked about that many times in the podcast. We've been of the forefront of the hand up, we were wrong thing. And I think you have to be with Lou Anarumo. I think definitely he did not deserve to have your support, if I'm being 100% honest. I don't think he deserved to have people in his corner, which he did. And he's come out and proved every wrong. And I definitely give him the credit for that. I think he's a large reason of why they played so well in the first matchup against the Ravens. I think if you can do the same thing there, generate that same kind of pressure. I think Trey had, they had a bunch of sacks, and I think their offensive line is even more depleted than they were then. And I mean, Joe Burrow had a fantastic game too, besides that late game interception where he just kind of threw a stupid one. But yeah, Larry Ogunjobi had 1.5 sacks and Sam Hubbard had 2.5, because it was pretty much, they just wrecked. They were insane with the rush that game. So I think you can do that again. I think the main thing that sucks is not having Keem Davis-Gaither. I really wish you had him in this game. This is the game that you really draft him for, the Ravens game. So it does suck to not see him on the field. Same with Logan Wilson. He had a great game against the Ravens first time too, but got to see everybody step up. Jermaine Pratt, I don't think he played a ton because it was the Ravens, because that's basically the Keem Davis-Gaither game. So it's going to be interesting to see Pratt get that uptick in production. I am kind of excited to see Marcus Bailey in this matchup. I mean, to see how much of that athleticism he really does have, which I think he still has some. I mean, you just don't kind of lose that whole athleticism, even though he has had a bunch of injury history. I'm excited to see him get the play, but the DBs, I'm excited. I think Lamar throws some balls sometimes that are very – he's going to give you a chance. He's going to give you a chance.
He's going to be generous. Yeah. He's going to be generous.
Yeah. Eli Apple also, just the Twitter stuff. I love it. I'm here for it. But I think this is a game where you can't come out with the same sort of game plan you did in the first time, but I think you have to look at what you did and then try to scheme off of that.
Yeah. My question about this game isn't necessarily the defense, like, are they able to stop Lamar or Huntley or, you know, whoever ends up being quarterback?
Yeah.
Because we kind of showed it in that Week 7 game. I do think if there's one kind of game-wrecking possibility that the Ravens have on the Bengals in this game, it's at the Bengals linebacker position. Like, they are really, really beat up right now. Like, it's going to be Pratt and Bailey. I think we've seen things from Pratt to feel confident in him.
Yeah.
Bailey has shown some flashes to where I'm not overly concerned that he's going to ruin this defense and ruin a ball game. I think he can do what kind of we saw Bocce do the last couple weeks. But after them, I mean, like, God forbid, if one of them gets banged up, like, we are in dire straits. This is, like, not good.
Yeah.
I mean, who is it even going to be? Clay Johnston and I don't even know.
I have no idea who they'd roll out there if one of them gets injured.
Andre Jones got picked up.
They'll have to pick up some guys off, like, free agency. Like, you have to.
Yeah. My actually, what I want to see, not what I want to see, but, like, theoretically, what I would want to see in that situation is, and I even think we might see it in general, I would be interested to see them kind of move Von Bell into the box a little bit, because he has shown he can play that before.
Yeah.
And then go maybe throw Ricardo Allen back there at safety.
I'd really like that. I think that'd be a really good set for this game.
I think that's something I kind of want to see. I want to see Ricardo Allen get some snaps, because I want Von Bell in the box. Because, I mean, would you, like, let's say it's third down or something, or just like in general, like, I think I have faith in Bailey that he can be solid. But, like, if you need a play, I have more faith in your two linebackers being Jermaine Pratt and Von Bell. Like, in that situation, get your best – like, you want to have your best player on the field at that point. And I don't think anyone – like, I think I'd take Ricardo Allen at safety over Marcus Bailey at linebacker. But, I mean, Bailey can also step up, and if he plays well, there's no need to package anything like that. So,
yeah, I'm just excited. I think it's going to be a great game. Biggest game since 2015. I mean, there's no way around it, really. Do you have anything else before we wrap it up today?
Yeah, just one I want to touch on, because I completely forgot to.
Yeah.
The NFL should be ashamed of themselves that hit on Drew Sample
was
picked up of a flag. I was there, and I was just like hands on my head, like, what are we doing? Like, I mean, he took like three steps and then launched into his head. Like, we want to talk about how we want to protect players and, you know, all this garbage. Like, it's garbage if the NFL doesn't call that. Like, you don't want to protect your players, because that was a player safety issue. Like,
well, he plays in Cincinnati. That's why.
I also feel that way. And then I have people tell me that, you know, oh, that's not true. You're just like biased. Cincinnati gets calls, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know,
show me one.
I'm tired of this argument, because, yeah, it does make me sound whiny, but we don't get calls.
No, there's been like three calls like that that one didn't like ruin the course of the game. But there's calls like that the Bengals don't get. They don't get the call again at the end of the game against the Jets with that Mike Hilton tackle. I mean, it's insane. They literally, I think there was something this week where they said that the guy had like a perfect form for tackle, and it was literally the Mike Hilton play that they called us on. So.
Yeah, Mike Hilton, we get screwed by that call. This was, I mean, Drew Sample goes down, and also it was by Bradley Chubb, who's like their best front player. Seven.
Yeah.
Yeah, their best front seven guy, easily. He's not a huge Simmons fan, so like I think he's incredible, even though Tyler Boyd kind of took his ankles for a touchdown. But anyway, so he takes three steps and launches and hits Drew Sample directly in the head, like two, three seconds after the play. Like, it's got to be 15 yards. Like, it just has to be. And does that 15 yards make a difference? I don't know. Maybe we go score.
Like, yeah.
I think that call does make it a different game, but that's not even like why I'm upset about it. Like, if the Bengals do that, I'd want to see a kick call. Like,
yeah.
If we want to talk about player safety, which should be the number one goal of the NFL, like that should be what we are focused on. Like, we do want these players to be like, player safety is what matters the most at the end of the day.
100%.
Like when I'm there, Teddy Bridgewater went down. Like, at the end of the day, like, it is just a game. Like,
yeah.
The main focus at that point was, man, I hope Teddy's okay. But if, like, that, then we have to make calls like this. Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah. I completely agree. It was definitely a Bush League non-call. Definitely mad that they didn't call it, especially we're a big Drew Sample podcast. Love the guy. So, definitely, you just hate to see players in a possibility where they could get hurt and then they don't call it. So, it sucks, but it is what it is. Like you said, it is at the end of the day, it is a game, but Sunday is a game we need to win. So if you can show out, go to the game, be there. We're all going to be there cheering our asses off. I'm excited. It's just going to be a ton of fun to see the atmosphere around the game. This slate of games too is awesome this Sunday. So I'm really excited for it. If you guys don't, go follow us on Twitter. Make sure to check out the blog. Scott and I are trying to put out as many pieces as possible. This is shade to Jake and Quinn, because they probably won't listen this far on the podcast if they do, but we're trying to get more stuff out there as we can. Scott had a piece on the FC Cincinnati hire. I just wrote my winners and losers for the Broncos game. Going to try to get a matchup piece up here soon, but make sure
I'm probably going to give a kind of rundown on Mile High too.
Love it. Mile High, yeah, stadium review.
All that stuff. Try to get that out like tomorrow.
Love to see it. Love to see it. So make sure you follow the podcast and all of us on Twitter. We will be posting more stuff. We're all trying to be more active on it. So let's get a win Sunday. Let's get to 9-6. Let's get to 9-6. But hope you guys enjoyed. And until next time, hoo day.
Hoo day.